bone.
His offspring were in the front seats, and he held Annalene in the back, at gunpoint. Seconds later, the land speeder ground to an anguished halt on the rough terrain, 80 meters from their position. Orin's children stepped out and looked around warily. The warrior quietly set down her Gaddurfi. There was a rifle behind her. She reached for it, but Ben touched her gloved hand. "You can't," he said. "They have Annalene."
"She does not matter,"
a Yark whispered to Ben. "I decide that." A Yark shook her head.
"Madness!"
The humans were arming themselves. Would more follow soon? Held by Orin, Annalene called out, "Ben, if you're here, stay away!" A Yark couldn't hear what Annalene's captors said to her after that, but it was clear they were doing nothing to keep her from yelling. "They mean to flush me out," Ben whispered. He felt for the lightsaber beneath his cloak, and then withdrew his hand. "I can't endanger Annalene."
"Then I attack."
A Yark clutched Ben's wrist.
"You too. You have a duty."
"Don't worry." Ben looked behind to where three children were cowering beneath an overhang. "I told you, I'll protect your people if Orin should..."
"Not that."
A Yark looked at Ben searchingly.
"Can he not know what old Tuskens knew?"
She spoke quietly but quickly.
"Orin Gold showed his true face. You kills him now, or he pursues you forever."
She pointed to the sons.
"It is the way of Sky Brothers."
Ben stared. This is another legend?"
"It is the legend."
A Yark watched Ben, who contemplated the story. After a moment, he shook his head. "I won't leave this undone. But I won't risk Annalene either." He looked to the left, to the forest of monoliths piled against the western mount. "Stay here," he said, crawling away behind cover. "I have an idea."
Chapter 44.
Orin saw no color in the place, apart from the landspeeder. Even its showroom shine was gone now, buried beneath dust. Vika knelt beside it, examining an undercarriage battered from the raucous ride up the mountain.
"Will she run?"
Orin asked, still holding Annalene. Vika shook her head.
"Stabilizers are gone," she said. "You could fly it, if you don't care where it goes."
"There's nowhere to go,"
Mullen said, looking warily around the abandoned camp.
"How can anyone live in a place like this?"
"I wouldn't call it living,"
Orin sneered contemptuously. He shoved Annalene toward Mullen.
"Hold her."
Orin scanned the bases of the stony pylons around them. Reaching a decision, he checked his flak vest and blaster.
"Vika,
forget the speeder and watch for snipers. I'm going to try something." Cautiously, he walked across the rubble toward the center of the clearing. A sad well sat there, little more than a jagged hole surrounded by dented tin pots. He turned.
"Kenobi!"
he yelled.
"Kenobi!"
Nothing but echoes. And Annalene.
"He's too smart for you," she said.
Orin looked back and scowled.
"Shut up."
He turned his attention back to the perimeter. Something was moving out there on both sides of the clearing. He could hear it. But as soon as he looked in either direction, the noise stopped too.
"This is no good,"
Orin thought. He looked back at the route they'd taken to get here. He wished he had some idea what was happening in the battle below. Could he and the kids bring down Kenobi's body and blame the mess on him? Or did they need to keep moving, perhaps crossing enough of the Jundland to reach freedom? He stalked around the well, kicking a pail. From behind a boulder, a spiky reptilian half a meter long bounded into the clearing. A massive, dark-eyed and big-jawed, it charged straight for Orin,
who quickly drew a bead and shot. Struck by the orange energy, the massive squawked and fell to the ground. Oren looked back at Mullen and Vika.
Thanks for the assist, he said dryly. We're watching for the big game,
Mullen said. He had Annalene's arm in one hand and his blaster in the other, as his eyes continued to scan their surroundings. Oren looked at the smoking creature and got an idea. Checking first that he was covered, he holstered his weapon and stepped toward the oozing massif. He lifted the carcass.
Let's do some home improvement, he said loudly.
Arriving back at the well, he dangled the dripping body theatrically over the hole.
Down you go!
Don't!
Ben's voice called out from afar. Oren lifted the massif by its legs and looked around.
What? He called out. You don't want me to poison your friend's well?
I was saying that to a yacht.
Ben's voice boomed.
The one you call Plug-Eye. Because she's going to shoot you. And you might accidentally drop the animal in anyway.
Somewhere, Oren heard a weapon safety clicking on. He nodded. So the Tuskens were listening to Kenobi.
Glad to have gotten your attention, he said.
Turn back now,
Ben repeated. This time, Oren could tell that the voice was coming from the forest of pillars to the west.
I don't feel like turning back, he said, tossing the creature's limp form down the hole. It bounced twice before hitting bottom with a thud. The well was dry.
Oren looked around. No one had fired at him. Ben wanted Annalene alive, and the Tuskens were following his lead. But Ben could change his mind at any moment, and Oren wasn't about to let him call the Sandys down on him. Pulling his weapon, Oren made his way carefully to an opening in the western rocks. He shot a look back at Mullen and Vika and mouthed a command. Wait for me. Oren stepped amid the megaliths. It was as bizarre a natural formation as he'd seen on Tatooine, almost designed by nature to form a labyrinth. Mountain wind whistled between the towers, which rose high enough to blot out even the midday suns. He certainly didn't lack for cover here. Getting a clean shot would be another matter.
I know you're there, Kenobi! He bellowed.
Turn back now.
Ben's voice resounded through the rocks, closer than before. Oren spun and fired. The shot hit the base of a tower, leaving a smoking pit in the surface. He kept walking. There was more movement. Footsteps fast and light. Oren fired again down a long corridor. Nothing. Somewhere he heard a Tuscan child crying. Oren growled impatiently.
Enough games, Kenobi!
Agreed.
Ben said, his voice coming from a different side now.
So turn back.
No!
Oren felt his eyes burning. With his left hand, he pulled out a second blaster. He raised both weapons and fired. Again and again, turning in all directions. He could see movement and dust rising. He only needed one lucky shot. Just one. Blaster fire from the labyrinth resounded across the clearing.
Ben, watch out!
Annalene yelled again. Unrestrained by his father's presence, Mullen shoved her forward. Annalene stumbled across the shattered stones and fell. Sprawled across the rocks, she turned around to see the young man aiming his blaster at her.
I've never been able to stand these snotty cowwells,
he said, one eyelid twitching as he stalked toward her. Rifle in hand, Vika looked at her brother.
Dad didn't say to kill her. Do we need her now?
Mullen asked.
I don't know that we ever needed her.
His sister responded.
Do you care?
Not really,
Vika said. Oren continued to fire as he marched forward. He parted his hands and shot in either direction down the stony aisles, and then ahead and behind. He heard screaming from multiple quarters, the pathetic wails of frightened Tuscan younglings. A bonus. All the frustration of the past months, all the worry of the last days, fed through his body and the blasters in his hands.
Show yourself!
A cracking sound emanated from above. Reflexively, Orin pointed his blasters upward. He'd been pounced on by Kenobi before, but the man wouldn't get the drop on him again. Except, the rock pillars were too tall for any man to scale, he saw. Then suddenly he heard another sickening snap, and a knife-shaped slab that had balanced for eons slid off the formation, plummeting toward him. Orin leapt forward just before the massive chunk of stone stabbed the ground where he'd stood. Above, a fissure appeared in another stone tower, and another. Orin cast his terrified eyes up and across the long rows of stone columns. This wasn't a groundquake by Bantha. This was something unreal, as if something invisible was pushing against the stones. He ran forward, blaster still clutched in his hands, but his arms bent to shield his face from the rain of dust. Pebbles came down, and then chunks sheared off, striking all around. Orin coughed as nuggets pelted his back. Another huge shard struck just ahead, and then another behind. He screamed, "What's going on?" Orin looked up as a shadow fell over him. Thunder sounded in the rocks to the west. Mullen glared at his sister.
"What in blazes is going on, Ofer?"
Before he could finish his sentence, Annalene threw a fistful of sand in his face. Blinded, he staggered, and Annalene grabbed his ankle, pulled it toward her, and bit down hard. Hearing her brother's howl, Vika pointed a rifle at Annalene. She fired once, but her injured shoulder jerked her arm to the left, and the shot missed. With animal instinct, Annalene dived for Mullen's legs, knocking him backward. She tried to wrestle with him to keep Vika from drawing another clear shot, but Mullen was too strong. Pinning her, he pointed his blaster in her face. That was when Vika screamed. A yark charged in from the cover to the west, howling a Tuscan war cry. Before Vika could bring her rifle around, a yark's Gaderfi smashed it from her hands. A return stroke sent the point of the Gaderfi ripping through Vika's side. In agony, Vika clutched her wound and fell away, scrambling to escape. A yark sprang over her toward Annalene and Mullen. Startled, Mullen pulled the blaster from Annalene's face to take aim at the Tuscan warrior. With all her might, Annalene heaved, forcing the burly man off to the side. His blaster sent a bolt just past a yark's head, but the Tuscan war leader did not stop. Swinging, a yark stabbed her Gaderfi point deep in his abdomen. Annalene launched herself clear as a yark brought the weapon down again and again on Mullen's body.
"Posse kills," a yark said in basic. "Posse dies."
In a fog of dust, Orin tried to crawl out from beneath the pile of rubble. Every move was painful. When he heard Vika scream, he jolted upright and felt the bones shift in his left leg. He fell to the ground at Ben's feet. In the shadows, the cloaked figure knelt over Orin.
"I did tell you to turn back," Ben said.
Mullen howled from beyond. Ben looked up for a moment and shook his head sadly. Whatever was happening, Orin thought, Ben seemed satisfied that Annalene was safe. The man was in no hurry to leave. Orin spat bitter dust from his mouth.
"Couldn't turn back. Jabba's people there."
Ben shook his head. "That's not what I meant. Your fear led to this. All of it. Fear of losing what you had. It put you on a path to suffering." Ben looked back. From his position on the ground, Orin saw a cowering Tuscan youngling emerge from behind one of the stone pillars to stare at the two humans. Ben smiled reassuringly at the tiny masked figure, before looking back to Orin.
I know how the path ends for you,
the cloaked man said. But there is still time, if you turn back now. Accept responsibility for what you've done. That won't square you with the Tuskens, but it will be a start toward redemption.
Orin sat up. He blinked the sand from his eyes.
I'll lose everything.
Ben inhaled deeply. Sometimes it takes losing everything to find your true path.
Ben started to stand, but then he looked up alert. To the west, a monolith with a triangular slab balanced above it suddenly gave way, unable to support its own enormous weight. Huge rocks tumbled down. The little Tuscan rushed to Ben's side for protection. More stones snapped loose and slammed to the ground. Orin could hear more Tuscan children yowling in the maze as the debris landed. But he was more interested in Ben's reaction. The man had seemed completely unafraid of the earlier phenomena, almost as if he'd orchestrated the whole thing. But now, one hand on the clinging Tuscan youngling, Ben looked worried.
Something's wrong, Ben said, his voice barely audible.
I didn't do that.
A yark brought the Gaddurfi down again and again. Trying to reach her feet, Annalene saw Vika crouching nearby. Limp and ashen-faced, Oren's daughter watched as her brother struggled, clawed, and finally ceased to move under a yark's attack. Then she turned and fled for the northern gap, and the trail leading downhill. A yark lifted her bloodied weapon and glanced back at the departing Vika. But before she could give chase, the Tuscan younglings, frightened by the clamor in the stone forest, poured from their hiding places to the west and clustered around a yark, separating her from Annalene. Annalene turned to follow, but a yark surprised her by calling out, Ben! Annalene stopped and looked back. As the crowd of children clutched at her robes, a yark lowered her weapon and looked to the west. A cloud of gray dust was rising into the air above the standing stones. A yark, who moments before had been in a blood rage, seemed spellbound. She spoke to the children in her own language, before looking at Annalene and repeating her words in basic.
See it, Annalene,
a yark said.
See, Ben.
Annalene stared, uncomprehending, at the rising dust. She knew she was in the heart of Tuscan territory, and that she should follow Vika to the safety of the posse. But Ben was still here, and so was Orin, and something big had happened.
Was it an avalanche?
She asked as the dust climbed. Is Ben in trouble?
No trouble,
the yark said softly. She nodded, watching again to the west.
No avalanche. I was right.
Annalene prepared to move again, but now the Tuscan children began chattering and tugging at a yark's garment. The warrior spoke to them hurriedly, clearly concerned about whatever information the excited younglings were providing. Then another deafening boom from the west followed, one that shook the pillars all around. Is that trouble? Annalene asked a yark. The warrior somehow seemed less fearsome now, surrounded by frantic younglings.
Is trouble,
a yark replied. The next sound from the west chilled Annalene's spine. She had heard the sound many times before, and she instantly knew this was no recording.
Great dragon,
she whispered.
Awakened by the sounds,
a yark said. Hastily, she tried to hoist a pair of children while still holding the bloody Gaddurfi. More younglings fled into the clearing from the western pillars.
I must hide the Ulia,
the warrior said. On impulse, Annalene stepped forward and reached for a young Tuscan's gloved hand.
I'll help.
Chapter 45. Orin stared, stupefied, as a monster stormed through the stone pillars toward him. Too large by far to fit into the corridor between the megaliths, the great reptile simply forced its way through like a battle tank, shattering them as it went. Hefty boulders bounced harmlessly off the quadruped's greenish hide. It was a canyon crate, bigger than any Orin had ever heard of. 50 meters long? 60? He wasn't about to measure it. Terrified, he scanned the debris for his blasters. One was there, smashed beneath a rock. Where was the other? Could it do any good? Kenobi! Orin yelled. Help me up! Clearly startled by the new arrival, Ben looked back at Orin. But more squealing Tusken brats ran past, shocked out of hiding, and his attention turned to them. Quickly! Ben yelled, pointing to the east. Go! Forget them! Orin tried to get Ben's attention again, but saw that it was too late. The crate had seen them through the dust cloud. Golden eyes glowing, it bounded forward, its clawed feet scrambling easily over the stones. It went for Ben and the Tusken child first, lashing out with its mighty tail. Orin threw his arm in front of his face, petrified. He looked out to see Ben duck quickly, pushing the child to the ground as he did. The pillar the tail struck shattered, its pieces plummeting toward the man and child at its base. Ben started to move again, to grab the youngling, Orin thought. But instead, Ben thrust his arms high. The rubble halted in midair, as if collected in an invisible basin. Orin looked at it in awe, and then looked back at Ben, mesmerized. Ben's face strained from the effort, but he gritted his teeth and gave a shove to the air. Half a ton of collapsing stone tipped harmlessly away from the prone Tusken child. Orin gawked. The crate lunged. So did Ben, now wielding a weapon of gleaming blue light. A lightsaber. Leaping directly into the creature's path, he sliced out with his weapon. The ripping movement caught the crate in the face, severing a number of its already jagged teeth. Startled, the dragon reared back. Behind Ben, the Tusken child scrambled to Orin's side, but the farmer was too fearful to shoo it away. Ben was moving again, this time hopping lithely up a rock to the creature's left, attracting its attention away from Orin and the little Tusken. Mighty rocks grinding to powder beneath its feet, the behemoth wrenched violently. It pounded its horned head against the broken pillar Ben had perched on top of. But Ben was no longer there, Orin saw. A backflip put the man on the crate's hind side with an intervening lightsaber slash at one of its tough back fins. The act seemed only to infuriate the dragon. It charged away from Ben, pulverizing more columns as it did. From behind a teetering formation, a Tusken elder appeared, carrying an infant. The figure froze in panic before the rushing creature's advance. Ben was running too. His free hand whisked through the air in a purposeful wave, and up ahead of the crate, the Tusken pair suddenly went aloft, flying harmlessly out of the monster's path. Startled, the dragon slid to a halt and screeched to the sky. It was the sound they'd hear in the oasis, Orin thought. The Tusken child cowered, burying its head against Orin's shoulder. This time, Orin pushed it away. Ben, the madman, had reached the dragon in the newly created clearing. Any thought of escape had passed. Orin had to see this. Aware now of the danger Ben's weapon posed, the crate turned on all fours and lashed out with its massive barbed tail. Ben leapt over it the first time it passed, ducked it the second, and slashed at it on the third. There was no fourth strike. The crate howled, recoiling. Orin looked on with amazement. The surrounding stone pillars framed the combatants like some impromptu arena, only one far too narrow, and that would surely become Ben's undoing, Orin thought. The crate seemed to realize it too. Hampered by its injured tail, the crate chose a new tactic,
crushing Ben with its immense weight. Pointing toward Ben and tilting its head, the dragon threw its body into a roll. With nowhere to leap, Ben disappeared beneath the mass of tumbling fury. Another megalith was struck, and then another, tipping and shattering like ale bottles knocked over on a bar. Shards pummeled the crate, and still it rolled, vanishing in the rising cloud of dust. Ben nowhere in sight. A second later, the dragon appeared again, racing from the haze on all fours toward Orin and the Tuscan child. Orin yelled, but then the crate did too, stopping meters short of them. Its head turned, its pointed beak-like mouth snapping in the direction of its shoulders. And now Orin saw why. Ben was there, clinging to the creature's jagged back, his tunic dirtied and torn. Somehow, he had survived the roll and wound up on top. And he was no passive rider. He raked the creature's haunches repeatedly with the lightsaber. That was what had stopped its advance, Orin realized. And stopping for the crate was deadly. Hopping from scale to stony scale, Ben landed astride the monster's neck. Finding a weak plate in its carapace, Ben plunged his blue blade in. The crate screamed, louder than any of Orin's sirens ever had. It shuddered, and Ben had to fight to stay atop the beast. But he did, and his lightsaber found a home again inside the animal, this time inside its primitive brain. The dragon died, its head thudding to rest, meters from Orin and the child. Mesmerized, Orin looked at the massive carcass. A nasty black tongue slipped from its mouth. Beside Orin, the youngling glanced back once at the dragon, and then at his savior, before scampering away without a word. Ben slipped off the creature's back and stared silently at it. To Orin, Ben seemed satisfied in the first moment, and then crestfallen in the next, as he seemed to realize what he'd just done in front of his witness.
You're a Jedi,
Orin exclaimed. Ben said nothing. His arms hung at his sides, the lightsaber limply pointing toward the ground. Orin's mind raced. He thought back to the hollow noose he'd seen in Anchorhead a while back. There'd been some kind of coup waged against the Republic by the Jedi, he thought. Orin didn't know much about Jedi. It had never made sense to him why the Republic would put its faith in a group it neither controlled nor understood. It wasn't smart business. Something must have gone wrong, because the Jedi had been purged, giving rise to the Empire. That's why you're here, Orin said, clawing at one of the rocky walls in an attempt to stand. That's why you're hiding. They're looking for you. Everyone. Ben just looked at the crate corpse. But he had not deactivated his weapon. And at once, Orin realized the danger he was in. Ben had just killed a crate dragon. And now his secret was out. Orin winced as he tried to move, supporting himself against the stone towers.
You're going to kill me.
Ben looked back at him. I haven't decided about that.
You haven't decided?
A weak smile came over Ben's face. I'm not inclined to kill the Silence people. That's something you'd do. Orin staggered from one stone surface to another, trying to make his way to the clearing. Behind, Ben sighed and turned to follow. But he walked slowly. And as he did, he switched off his lightsaber and returned it to its hiding place beneath his robe. He's not going to kill me, Orin thought, forging ahead against the pain. That led to his next thought.
I've got a card to play.
Orin would go off-world and visit this empire and become something again. He had something to sell again. Ben Kenobi's hide. To blazes with Tatooine, with all of it. Struggling, he stepped out into the light of the suns. Annalene was nowhere to be seen, nor Vika. But Mullen was there,
on the ground near the JG-8. A lone mastiff stood over his body, feasting. Heart in his throat, Orin dragged his broken leg across the clearing. The mastiff, done gorging, wandered away. Orin reached his son's side and collapsed onto the ground beside him, wailing. Mullen was dead at the hands of a Tuscan, just like his beloved younger son, Vika's twin. Where was Vika? Squinting, he saw footprints and a light trail of blood heading off to the northern exit. Was it Vika's blood or Annalene's? Would Vika really have fled back to the posse? If so, there was no helping her now, any more than if the Tuscans had gotten her. Ben approached, staying a respectful distance away. Orin looked up from the mess that had been Mullen. Did Ben expect him to repent now? After all this? He snarled hatefully. I'm going to tell them! The Empire! And they'll destroy you! Ben folded his hands together and looked at the ground. Orin struggled to stand again. Did you hear me, Jedi? The Empire will destroy you! And everything you love! Ben shook his head. They've already done that. The farmer ignored him. He staggered toward the damaged landspeeder. You better kill me now, because I mean it! He heaved himself into the vehicle. I'll do it, Kenobi! No, you won't, Ben said. I've seen your future. I don't think you're going to live much longer. Because of you! Because of you. Because you didn't turn back. With that, Ben pivoted and started walking away. Orin gawked at the man, but only for a moment. He activated the JG-8, which groaned in protest. There was no going back, not with the posse and the crooks down there. No, there was only forward, through the opening to the south and whatever lay that way. If Vika lived, he'd find her again somehow. Ben simply stood and watched as the vehicle lurched forward a few meters at a time, starting and stopping fitfully. Orin fought with the controls, pounding at the dashboard with his fist. Blast you, move! The younglings hidden, Annalene re-entered the clearing from a narrow opening to the east. Visiting Tuscans in their place of last resort was unnerving on its own. But she nearly turned right back around when she saw Orin hovering toward her in the battered JG-8. Then she realized he wasn't heading for her at all, but rather making for the exit to the south. Orin looked even more beat up in the vehicle, his hair covered with dust and his mouth bloodied. He seemed to be paying her no mind. Looking back, she saw Ben standing 50 meters away, making no effort to pursue. Orin seemed to notice her at last when the reluctant landspeeder came to another sudden stop. Annalene could barely recognize the man she knew, but for the wicked smile that came over his face when he saw her. His words dripped with delightful venom. Ben's been lying to you, he said. Annalene shrugged. You did it all the time. Orin sneered. But before he could say anything else, the Tuscan he knew as Plug Eye emerged, Gaddurfi in hand, from the western labyrinth near the southern opening. The adversaries saw each other. Orin took aim and crushed the accelerator. The JG-8 seemed to forget its reservations, gunning forward. The Yark stood stoically as Orin raced to ram her, until the moment she hurled her Gaddurfi. The heavy implement spun through the air, striking the windshield with terrible force. A spray of glass showered Orin. His windshield smashed for the second time by someone he'd angered. But the landspeeder surged forward anyway, striking the Tuscan warrior with full force and carrying her with it toward the southern exit. Annalene pursued the landspeeder. Orin couldn't see anything through the fractured windshield, she realized. But he was accelerating nonetheless. She skidded to a stop in time to watch the hovercraft miss the narrow bantha path that led down the side of the cliff. The vehicle sailed freely for seconds until, lacking anything for the anti-grav units to rappel against,
It tumbled downward, end over end. It vanished in the bad country. Meters behind Annalene, Ben ran up.
A yawk!
He yelled. Annalene looked down. Off the edge of the sheer drop from the Bantha Trail, a yawk clung to a jutting rock. Annalene scrambled to the side and reached down for the raider's hand. Dazed, the Tuscan stared up at her, jeweled eye gleaming in the suns. Then the Tuscan murmured something, and Annalene felt a yawk's grip loosening. Reaching Annalene's side, Ben leaned over her shoulder and looked down at a yawk.
You want to live, he said. Remember?
For a moment, a yawk didn't move. But then, her hand tightened around Annalene's. The settler and the stranger hauled the warlord up. Bowed but unbroken, a yawk knelt and gazed at the smoke rising from the canyon hills below. The Jundland was unforgiving.
You have what you wanted, Ben said.
Not all.
A yawk turned back. Straightening, she pushed past Ben and Annalene and climbed back onto the plateau.
But deal is done. You go.
Annalene nodded. She could hear the sounds of pounding boots. The Tuscans would be returning at any minute. But with Ben there, she felt no fear at all.
I thank you,
he said to a yawk, bowing. Standing before a passageway into the labyrinth, a yawk looked back coolly.
You remembers, Ben, she said. You knows what you can be.
With that, she slipped back into the shadows. Annalene and Ben walked swiftly across the clearing, stopping only at Mullen's corpse. Annalene blanched then, and turned to gaze back in the direction of Orin's departure. Ben looked at her.
I'm sorry, he said.
I'm not, Annalene replied. Turning, she embraced him. It was not a passionate hug, but the exhausted collapse of someone who had had a very long day, and night, and day. This embrace, Ben did not refuse. She looked up at him and started to speak. He spoke first.
Not here, he said.
He smiled.
My place.
Tonight. Then he nudged her in the direction of the trail leading down.
Chapter 46.
Ben had found his own way home. So had Annalene, and it began the hardest afternoon of her life. She'd emerged from the hills to find a muted victory celebration. The farmers who'd come to the Jundland after a would-be traitor had found instead a battle with a perennial enemy, the gangsters of Mos Eisley. And the country folk had absolutely routed the city folk. Most said the need, mathematician enough to calculate odds on the fly, had decided to cut his losses in the Galt affair and withdraw with only the tail of a skiff on fire. Olbrek and the others were relieved to see Annalene, but unhappy to hear that they'd been robbed of their chance to settle with Orin. Nearby, Annalene found Vika, under treatment from Doc Mel. In shock, the injured woman didn't respond at all when Annalene told her of her father's demise. Questions came at Annalene from all directions. Thankfully, Lily's husband saw her situation and offered to drive her back to the claim alone. He dropped her off and departed without a word. Home, the famished Annalene ate as she packed, explaining to her puzzled children between bites what had happened. What she understood of it, anyway. In late afternoon, Lily arrived at the back door of the residence, her face an ashen pink. She stayed outside as she recounted to Annalene what was being said at her home, and at others across the oasis. In a moment in which every hidden resentment against the Galt suddenly found voice, most had been quick to find Ben faultless. It was so like Orin, they said, to deflect blame to a hapless newcomer, and someone would have had to be terrified to seek shelter in a known Tuscan nest. Or crazy.
But while all appreciated Ben's revelation, it rankled many that he'd evidently learned truths in days that had evaded people who worked around Orin for years. Blameless or not, Ben was a strange character, and few were in any hurry to see him again. Under the settlers' questioning, once tough Vika had melted into a pathetic, simpering thing, describing in detail Orin's embezzlement from the fund and his attacks against those who wouldn't subscribe to it. Then, fearing for her life, she lashed out at the Calwells, claiming Jabe had been along not just on the staged Ulbrich raid, but all the ones before. And in Vika's story, Annalene had known all about it, had profited from the sales of guns and ale. No one was overly inclined to believe Vika, nor the oafish Zed, who echoed her story when confronted for his role. But the financial records found in Orin's home, which he had failed to erase through lack of time or overconfidence, held damaging facts. They detailed tens of thousands of credits paid from the fund to the claim over the years for ale, weapons, and garaging, all the way back to Danar Calwell's time. All quite legitimate from Annalene's point of view, but the sums boggled the minds of many poor prospectors who saw conspiracy. Several old-timers recalled Java trumping up a Tuscan war years earlier to sell shoddy weapons. Was this like that? Annalene had seen beyond corruption, sure, but hadn't they seen Orin walking behind the counter many times, plucking money from the cash box with Annalene's indulgence? And what about all her private financial records sitting in the data pad right on his desk? How separate were the families, really? Annalene already knew, not very separate at all. There were just too many ties to disentangle. Ties that Annalene had let grow over the years because it was easier not to argue with Orin. But where the links between the two families had brought them to a position of respect and relative wealth, it now made them the focus of envy and suspicion. It had all transpired just as Ben had said it would. Annalene now counted fortune-telling among his other talents. She had already noted that no one had arrived at the claim for dinner. Her position was untenable. Given time, she might sort it out if she were on Coruscant with a lawyer. But this was Tatooine, where rumor and bad feelings spread like sand on the wind, and where minds, once made up, never changed. She and Lily hugged tearfully. Annalene, unable to begin to explain to her friend what had transpired or what her plans were, she simply promised to contact her again, and then she shut the door, ready to walk the claim one last time. Light returned to Orin slowly. When it arrived, it was piercing, and so was the pain. The sky shimmered for some reason, a brilliant whorl at the end of the tunnel. He could not feel his legs. They were there, he could tell, his hands were resting against them. But there was no feeling in his feet or toes at all. "It's the crash," he thought. "I've been burned." He'd been through this before. As a child, he'd stayed out on a midsummer day with no hat or skin protection, and had come back with a face so raw and parched that even smiling hurt. His parents had kept him inside for a day, his face bandaged to keep him from picking at it. The fabric on his face now felt like that, only rougher. Yes, that was it. He'd been bandaged and taken to Bastine. Doc Mel was probably there, conferring with the local doctors about his case. Orin breathed in relief. And then he heard his breath. Something was over his mouth, something metallic, clacking against his broken teeth when he opened wide. Another sense memory flooded back, from his one off-world trip. He'd picked up a bacterial infection that had left his limbs raw and scabbing. It had earned him an hour in a Bacta tank, something uncommon on Tatooine. He'd worn a breather mask then. He wore something like that now, only tinny and cold to his lips.
The light above disappeared. Slowly, the face of a Tuscan came into view and vanished.
No!
He pushed down with his hands, lifting his torso. He saw his legs, now bandaged. He felt the gloves on his fingertips. He felt the shroud on his face, and the metallic eyepieces against his eyelids.
Merciful universe, no!
Another Tuscan stepped into view.
Oringolt.
Orin heard it as an animal grunt. But it was his name. And it was definitely the one-eyed Tuscan he tried to ram.
Plug-Eye.
I am a Yark.
The Tuscan warlord said.
You lives, Oringolt.
He clutched at the bumpy surface beneath his body. He realized he was lying some distance off the ground atop a rectangular pile of stones.
This is my son's burial platform,
a Yark said. Orin simply shook his head, his eyes too dry for tears. He had seen the things before. A Yark grabbed at his shoulders.
You have work.
She turned him. Orin saw the familiar stone pillars go past until finally he faced a shorter metallic cylinder. It was a vaporator. He knew the model by sight. It was the vaporator the Tuscans had stolen from Wild Ulbrich. But instead of gutting it for metals, the warrior and her companions had placed it upright. Now heaving, they brought it closer. As it approached, he realized the funereal bier had been expanded to become something else. It wasn't to be Orin's grave. It was his work platform.
You gives us water,
a Yark said.
And you will be fed.
Orin struggled. The parts of his body that could still move were suffocating. They were so tightly wound beneath the wrappings.
You will be fed. And we moves you when we move. And you will live while we have water.
Orin heard his breath rasping louder and louder.
No! No! No!
Orin thought it but didn't say it. For no was a word. And hearing his voice through the mouthpiece would confirm what he knew. That he was now one of them. A sand person. He resolved never to speak again. The first sun was slipping behind the cliffs to the west when two hovercraft arrived at the foot of Ben's Hill. Glomer had kept Annalene's battered old landspeeder and the light van, which Tar would need to run the store. In exchange, he'd provided her with two of her souped-up sports speeders, which she figured would come in handy in the desert, or wherever they and Ben ended up. She chuckled to herself as she parked. She'd seen Ben on a hover bike, but had no idea if he drove a landspeeder. Well, she'd have time to find out and teach him if he didn't. She stepped out of the vehicle, its back seat packed to overflowing with hastily packed luggage and goods. Across from her, Jabe and Callie emerged from their similarly loaded repulsor craft. So much stuff, but so little too, worth taking away from a lifetime. It was sad, Annalene thought, but also refreshing. Jabe's face fell as he looked up at the hut.
This is it? He still doesn't have a door,
Callie noted. Annalene's daughter had been quiet since closing the livery, but seeing Ben emerge from the home cheered her up, as it did Annalene.
Welcome, Ben said, walking down the slope.
Instead of his cloak, he wore a white shirt with long cuffs and light gray trousers, an ensemble she hadn't seen him in before. He looked refreshed, as if he'd somehow gotten some sleep in the few hours since she'd seen him. He carried a small beige backpack over his shoulder. Annalene stepped toward him, glowing. But before she could reach him, Ben's Eopis trotted from inside the house, bleating to him.
Ah, he said, setting down the backpack. I found them on the way home.
The gang's all here,
Annalene said affectionately. Ben looked up. Are your affairs settled?
As much as they'll ever be, she said.
In the vehicle, she had hard currency from her stash, and Glomer's payment to her electronic account could be accessed in Bastion or Mos Eisley. It was enough to live on for a long time, especially out here. She didn't know if that was Ben's plan. He had only told her to pack for time away. Wherever it was, though, she felt safe in assuming they'd be together.
As Callie knelt to nuzzle Rue and the baby, Ben studied Jabe.
Are you all right, son?
He asked.
Yeah, I am. I want to thank you for helping us. And for saving me last night.
Jabe looked down, shamefaced.
I didn't deserve it.
Ben shook the boy's hand.
You were only a few steps down the wrong path.
He looked Jabe in the eye.
You were desperate for something to do. But someone I respect once told me that wise people never make desperate decisions.
He reflected for a moment, then smiled.
Actually, he phrased it a lot differently from what I just said. But the advice is sound.
Jabe smiled. Annalene beamed. She looked back at the land speeders.
It'll be dark soon.
Should we unload?
No,
Ben said, turning toward the pouch on the ground.
That can wait until Mos Eisley.
Callie's eyes widened.
Mos Eisley? I know we were just there yesterday,
he said, lifting the backpack.
It certainly doesn't seem like yesterday, but there's a transport preparing to leave from Docking Bay 56 the day after tomorrow, and passage is booked.
Annalene gawked.
How is that possible?
Before Ben could answer, Callie hugged him, just hard enough to cause him to drop the pouch again. He laughed.
Don't you want to hear the destination?
Not really,
Jabe said, stepping back and slapping hands triumphantly with his sister. The first stop is Bastion, Ben said. The planet, not the city.
First stop?
Annalene echoed.
That's right.
Ben smiled and looked over at the single sun that remained. It should be safe going to Mos Eisley, tonight of all nights. With all the posse activity out there today, Tuscans will be avoiding the north for weeks. He gestured to the second landspeeder.
If you would, kids, please wait at the bottom of the hill. I need to talk to your mother for a moment.
Dazzled, Callie looked back at her mother.
You never said we'd be leaving Tatooine. I didn't know,
Annalene said, mind still reeling.
It seemed to fit, though. Just one more impulsive act in a day of them.
She felt as if gravity would give way next. Jabe was already behind the controls of the second landspeeder, waving.
Callie, come on!
Callie leapt up, kissing Ben on the cheek.
We'll see you soon!
She spun and dashed to the vehicle, dust flying beneath her feet. In a moment, the siblings were driving to the foot of the hill, cheering audibly over the engine. Annalene looked at Ben and marveled.
You don't give a woman a chance to catch her breath, do you?
Ben smiled wanly for a moment before turning away to his Eopies.
I want you to know something,
he said, reaching for Rue's lead.
I would have liked to have saved Orin. He wasn't your responsibility,
she countered, watching him place the animals in their pen.
You didn't live around him for years, not knowing what he'd turned into.
Ben smiled back.
But once you knew, you did something. And you didn't wait. You're giving me too much credit.
The only reason I did anything was because of you.
No, I think you deserve quite a bit of credit. And a new start,
he said. He walked to the backpack. Opening it, he drew out a data pad. Annalene recognized it in the dimming light.
Hey, that's my old one. The one I gave you.
Ben activated it.
I had to take the speeder bike to a village to get a signal off-world this morning. And I rode on Rue this afternoon to get a response.
But it's official, he said, passing the device to her.
You're in.
Annalene's eyes scanned the words.
She staggered backward as if struck by a great weight. You sent my application.
She gawked at him.
But that was 20 years old.
Alderaan still exists, right?
So does the university system.
Ben stepped beside her and pointed to an entry on the screen. They're still doing the exobiology expeditions, launching from their branch on Naboo. Annalene remembered the advertisement by heart. 10 worlds in 2 years, studying 1,000 species. Most little understood by science. She looked at it again.
Accepted. How is that possible?
Ben crossed his arms.
That's one of those things I can't let you ask me about. Let's just say you had strong references on Alderaan. She wasn't sure whether to believe it or him.
The whole thing seemed impossible, incomprehensible.
Going to university at my age? I just can't believe it. It doesn't make any sense.
It makes more sense than someone of your abilities serving calf and shelving feed, he said. There's a slot for Callie to get in this season, too. And there will surely be more opportunity out there for your son than there is here.
Annalene looked at the screen and laughed in spite of herself.
I see you couldn't get me into a school on Coruscant. My powers are indeed limited.
Ben took the datapad back from her and walked with it to her landspeeder.
She glided after him,
barely feeling the ground under her feet. He placed the datapad safely inside the vehicle. Almost giddy, she cracked a joke.
Are you sure you're going to be happy being the traveling companion of a middle-aged student? I can't deny I miss the stars, he said, his hands resting on the door of the landspeeder. And in another life...
He nodded gently, his mouth crinkling to the tiniest smile. Then he looked up at her solemn.
But I'm afraid I can't go.
Annalene froze.
What do you mean?
I have responsibilities here. Things to look after.
What kind of responsibilities?
Annalene looked back at the house. She spied Rue in the pen.
If it's the Eopies, we can drop them at a ranch on the way.
That's not it.
Ben shook his head and started walking away from the landspeeder.
Wait. You did all this. You saved us. You led us all here.
She stepped after him.
We are who you're looking after.
You don't need looking after, Annalene.
Ben said, his back to her as he walked up the hill.
You're quite capable. Extremely capable.
Annalene stood in the swiftly falling night, bewildered. Since her talk with Ben in the bedroom... Momentum had carried her through the events of the day. That and the knowledge that he was part of the next chapter.
I don't want you to stay, she implored.
I want you with me,
Annalene.
Annie, I told you, everyone calls me Annie.
You know that's not possible. It's not even sensible.
Sensible? What's sensible?
She kicked at the sand. Working with someone for 20 years, only to find out they've been defrauding half the oasis?
This is just a fantasy.
Like Tusken Raiders you can reason with?
She grabbed at his shoulder and spun him around.
Or a man who arrives out of nowhere, who risks his neck to help people he's never met, like he's some kind of...
She stopped, searching vainly for the next word. Ben took a step back. It was a small step, almost imperceptible. But to Annalene, totally aware of him, it seemed like a light year. And she lost her train of thought. It made her take a breath.
I'm sorry,
she said, struggling to control her emotions.
But we want you with us.
She reached for his hand.
I want you with us. With me. Now just...
I have a family already,
Ben said, abruptly pulling his hand back. His eyes shone at her in the fading light.
You have...
You once asked me if I had a family to look after, he said. I do. It's why I'm here.
Annalene looked around, laughing nervously.
Not the Eopies,
she asked in a small voice.
No. There's a child,
he said, looking as if he'd given her his most secret truth.
It's my responsibility.
Annalene shook her head, tears finally arriving. Yes, she'd imagined this possibility once, but it put it out of her head. It didn't make sense that it would trap him here forever. You can make provisions, she said. Families do it all the time. You can look after the child and still...
No, I can't, Ben said firmly. I must be here.
He turned to leave. She looked about at the shadows.
Then we'll stay. We don't have to go off-world.
You have your destiny, Annalene. I have mine.
Annalene looked back at the landspeeder. That's what this was all about. The university? You're sending me away?
I can't have you here, Ben said, walking back to his house. And you can't stay.
Annalene stared blankly at him as he opened the curtain that covered the front doorway. None of it made sense. Since before dawn, it had been the vision of a life with Ben in the picture that had gotten her through the craziness. Events had been so extreme that the lifeline he represented had taken on the feeling of a long-held dream. And that made it all the worse.
You lied to me, she said, her words barely audible.
Ben turned in the doorway. What's that?
You lied to me, she said, feeling numb. You lied to me. It may have been for 15 hours rather than for years, like Oren, but you lied to me, like Oren said.
Ben's eyes widened.
I never,
he started to say before stopping. After a moment, he spoke again.
Yes, I guess I have been lying to you.
He looked off to the side.
And not just about tonight or the child. I've been lying to you about other things. A lot of other things. From the beginning.
Annalene closed her eyes.
Well,
she said quietly,
I think we can both agree on one thing.
She opened her eyes and looked directly at him.
I don't need that. Not anymore.
She turned and started walking.
I feel sad for you, Ben. Goodbye.
Stiffly, she climbed into the landspeeder. She paused only for a single look back to see Ben, alone, and watching from the doorway. Then she drove down to where her children awaited and beckoned for them to follow. Together, they sped across a desert, already covered with stars.
Chapter 47.
The young warrior swung his Gaddurfi, impaling the Jawa. The little beast squealed and shook, and life left his body. Ayark looked on the carnage with approval. The change was working. 2 days earlier, settlers had been threatening to overrun the pillars. Now, attacking at sunset rather than dawn, her little band had conducted its first raid in the western Dune Sea, south of the Jundland. The region was sparsely populated, and tonight's catch was nothing more than a caravan of Jawas, late for a rendezvous with their sandcrawler. The clan of Yark and Sherad Het would never have bothered with such rodents. But tonight, they made excellent prey for a people robbed of confidence. A day at a time had always been the only path forward for the Tuscans. There seemed no other way for those who lived under a curse. Something, however, had changed, and it had changed in Ayark. The war leader wanted her whole clan to reach the future. That meant selecting targets in the proper order. Attrition was unacceptable. Strikes had to be more than an expression of Tuscan hate and dominance. They had to be useful. They had to teach the warriors something. And her desire to survive had required something else. The one called Oren had taken to mewling weakly at all hours. They had tied a guard massive to him to make sure he didn't try to drag himself away. But there seemed no danger of that. Ayark doubted he would live much longer. But he'd gotten the vaporator working in his hours on the beer, and that was all that was important. Alone among clans this season, Ayark's people would drink and grow mightier. Taking water from the sky was forbidden, yes. But Ayark had paid little mind to other superstitions in the past. Neither Sky Brother was worthy of respect. Why should their sky be protected? a metal knife to the clouds was no less than they deserved. The water began transforming the remnants of the tribe within hours. It was sweet to the taste, magical, the elders said. Little children on the edge of death began to revive. Banthas were working longer. Even the few remaining warriors seemed readier to fight. A Yark would take any improvement. Sometimes a little sacrilege came in handy. They would live. And they had to live, because for the first time, her people were daring to care about tomorrow. The other Tuscans had seen Ben's defense, had seen the monstrous cloud he raised in the pillars, had seen the corpse of the crate. There had to be some reason these powerful figures kept arriving amid the Sand People. Some role their clan was intended to play in the next cycle of the Story of the Suns. More vocally than ever, her people spoke their longings for a powerful outsider to help them destroy their enemies. Ben would never be that person. A Yark would warn the other Tuscans away from his home. He had nothing to take, and there was little value in irritating a wizard. It didn't matter, the believer said. Someone would come. But while a Yark welcomed any hope that encouraged her people to strive once more, she herself now looked to a different day. A day when the clan would realize that it didn't need a mystical outsider after all, that it already had the leader it needed. With that thought, a Yark plunged her Gaddurfi again into the Jawa leader's back. Existence was a curse, but it was not without its pleasures. The Lady of Bastine hung in orbit over the glistening golden crescent of Tatooine. Annalene stood at the giant observation window in her cabin and looked down. It seemed so strange to see a world like this for the first time. Tatooine had more clouds from this angle than she had ever seen from the ground. Ben's Alderaanian patron, whoever he or she was, had come through not only with the university fellowship, but with first-class accommodations. Lady had not been expected to launch until early that morning, and Annalene had figured on taking the kids to the Twin Shadows Inn. But Lady's compartment dwarfed any room to be had on Kerner Plaza, and so, after dropping off their cargo, the family had simply stayed aboard. They'd left only to close her bank account and to dispose of Glomer's snazzy land speeders. One they'd abandoned with a note of apology in Garndell Roy's lot. The JG-8 he'd leased to Orin wouldn't be coming back after all. The other they'd sold to a dealership close to the spaceport. They deposited the proceeds, along with what extra she could afford, in a parcel addressed to Lily at the claim for distribution to the Settlers Fund members. It wasn't enough, but it was necessary. Annalene had barely felt the ship's launch, refusing to stand glued to the window as her children had. She'd wandered the inner halls for hours as the vessel orbited, awaiting rendezvous with a shuttle bearing more passengers. Annalene looked like she belonged, in the fancy chandrelin gown her husband had bought her. She finally had a place to wear it. But she didn't feel as though she'd gone anywhere yet. No, her thoughts had remained on the ground, still back at the little hut on the edge of the mountains. Callie had been devastated by Ben's refusal to join them. Jabe, simply confused. Annalene had been both. She had walked and wondered, replaying every short moment she'd spent with him, trying to see how she'd misunderstood. She didn't know if she believed Ben's family story at all, and she wondered again and again if she'd left too abruptly. Orin's deception had stung her, and Ben's words had struck her hard. But clearly, the man was genuinely committed to something that kept him there, and that was what mattered. In the end, she'd been left with a puzzle as impenetrable as the Junlin wastes themselves. And now, in her cabin at last, she could see that rugged land as it began to slip behind the Terminator into night. Down there, the suns would be setting on Mos Eisley, with the scoundrels freer to work their mischief. Dewbacks on the ranches would settle down and snooze. Sand people in the hills would be on the move, preying on the helpless. and patrons of the claim would come to terms with the new ownership and drink to forget their workdays. She hoped someone was keeping Bomer's carafe full. Her children joined her at the window. "We'll be going into hyperspace soon," Callie said. She looked at her mother. "Thinking about Ben?" Annalene shook her head. "The store," she said. "When your father died, I swore to myself I wouldn't let the store go under, if it was the last thing I did. It was all I could do for him, to remember him."
"You did fine, Mom," Jabe said.
She looked at him, so handsome in his dress clothes. He looked just like his father. "I did do fine," she said, putting her arm around him. "And I pushed you to help me. And I'm sorry. That wasn't your dream." She smiled weakly. "It wasn't mine either. But I felt like I had to stay for it." Callie moved closer, and Annalene embraced them both.
I think, maybe Ben's doing the same thing," Annalene said.
"He's not staying on Tatooine because he wants to. I think he thinks he has to. Maybe somebody entrusted him with something. Something he feels he has no right to abandon. Someone else's dream, maybe. Like Danar in the store." Sniffling, Callie looked up. "But you're leaving." Eyes glistening, Annalene gave a crumpled smile. "I did my time," she said. "Ben hasn't yet. But who knows? Maybe in 5 or 10 or 20 years, he'll have done his time too." Her children at her side, she looked down from space as the ship's engines revved up. "Goodbye, Ben," Annalene whispered. "And thank you." Outside, the world blurred and vanished. Meditation. It has been a long couple of days, but I don't feel tired. This was another test, Qui-Gon, wasn't it? When you finally answer, you must tell me what you thought of my solution. I know where I am now. I'm in the Rain Shadow. Being near all the big events in the galaxy, I was on the mountaintop for many years. Now I'm on the back on the lee side. It's supposed to be dry here. But I'll leave the shadow one day. I've been keeping watch tonight over the Lars farmhouse and looking to see something else. Up there, over the horizon. I think that must have been the passenger ship. Stars don't disappear. They're safe above. Luke is safe below. And I will be okay. It's a long way back to the house, Qui-Gon. May the Force be with you. It's time for me to go home.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars Kenobi by John Jackson Miller. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars Kenobi is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2013, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.